Thank you. So I'd like to begin by thanking my colleagues who participated in a faculty seminar in February on the original version of What is Metaphysics. Also, the students who were in the Schelling group last semester, we spent one day looking at this original version and thinking about how it related to Schelling. A lot of the ideas that were broached in those two seminars, I'm going to try to develop today. So thank you to everybody who's here who participated in those seminars. My lecture will take about an hour, maybe a little less than an hour. On July 24th, 1929, in the auditorium of the University of Freiburg, Martin Heidegger delivered what would become one of the most celebrated and most lampooned lectures in 20th century philosophy. Ostensibly about the most fundamental domain of all inquiry, Heidegger's inaugural lecture, What is Metaphysics?, instead asks us to reflect on something that belongs to no domain at all. Nay, not on something, but on nothing, or rather on the nothing. Worse yet, Heidegger would have us believe that all knowledge, and hence everything we are trying to accomplish in higher education, derives from an essential experience of the nothing, which is itself revealed only through anxiety. What is Metaphysics no doubt provoked anxiety, to say nothing of outrage, in the hundreds, if not thousands, of students, professors, and community members in attendance. Yet it also provoked profound admiration, not just for the man, but for the world and our place within it. Heinrich Petzet, who was studying in Freiburg at the time, has this to say about the effect of Heidegger's inaugural lecture. It was as if a tremendous streak of lightning split apart the dark sky that had hung over the allegory of the cave. The things of the world lay open and manifest in an almost aching brilliance. The way that was offered was not well trodden and not without danger. It was neither well marked nor certain of its goal. Rather, it was a path full of dangers, all the way to its last consequence, a path that was inconvenient and that contradicted everything familiar. We were dealing not with an object of scholarly research, but with something thought, and there was no getting away from its demands. We were dealing not with a system, but with existence. Blinders fell away from my eyes. What had been offered by education and easily believed now disappeared. For a brief moment, I felt as if I had had a glimpse into the ground and foundation of the world. In my inner being, something was touched that had been asleep for a long time. Heidegger awakened it with his question, why are there beings at all and not rather nothing? Petzet's report conveys something of the sweep and grandeur of Heidegger's lecture. However, if you read the published version of What is Metaphysics, some of Petzet's claims might come across as hyperbolic. For example, while it is true that Heidegger's lecture concerns existence, there is a larger systematic aim that seems to animate it, namely to provide a unifying foundation for the sciences so that they may again play their proper part in the disclosure of beings. Heidegger was, after all, lecturing to the entire university and perhaps already had an eye on a future administrative role. Such, at any rate, is what the published version of What is Metaphysics might suggest. But the published version is no longer the only one available. So last year, an important typescript was discovered in the archive of the classical philologist Ernst Zinn. And Dieter Thome, a German scholar, recently edited this German typescript and provides sound philological evidence for its authenticity as the original version, as the version Heidegger actually delivered in July 1929. And there's additional corroborating evidence that Thome doesn't discuss, so this came to light recently as well. So he did have access to this. I'll read this quickly. Martin Heidegger, a typewritten manuscript of the Freiburg inaugural address. And then importantly, he writes prior to publication. So this typescript, according to Zinn, is the version prior to the published version that most of us are familiar with. Additionally, this came to light, that typescript was in this copy of What is Metaphysics, which Zinn had specially bound, and on the title page of this typescript is a dedication of this edition of What is Metaphysics, is a dedication by Heidegger to Zinn's wife, so Frau Walburga, in memory, and then he writes, July 24th, 1929. This suggests that perhaps Zinn's wife was also at the lecture at the time. So I think a lot of this material suggests that the version that I'm going to be talking about is the authentic original version of Heidegger's inaugural lecture. But the case is not altogether closed yet. So not only does this original version better accord with Petzet's description than the published version, it also differs from the published version in both form and content. Indeed, the considerably shorter and more direct original version casts a different light on the intention and significance of Heidegger's lecture. The following reflections serve to substantiate this claim by comparing the two versions and situating them within Heidegger's life and thoughts. So I'll divide my lecture as follows. I'll give a very brief background account to the genesis and context of the lecture. Then, for those of you who haven't read the lecture or haven't read it recently, I'll provide a summary of the published version. And then I'll look at four different themes, science and the university, logic and thinking, the role of anxiety, and the relationship between being and nothing in the two versions. So as for genesis and context, in a foreword to another text, Heidegger says that What Is Metaphysics was composed around the same time as this other text, namely in 1928. However, while Heidegger may well have been thinking about the theme or even the content of his lecture while he was composing this other text in the summer and fall of 1928, he by no means had a draft ready at this time. Even on May 29, 1929, a little over 1 month before he was to deliver his inaugural lecture on metaphysics, Heidegger was able to write from Freiburg, quote, "Beyond what I had expected, the call here has brought me a lot of external work and, amid the growing pressure, unusual obligations, so much so that I have not even been able to get to my most pressing task, the public academic inaugural address. This must take place this summer," sort of a month away. Heidegger was indeed under great pressure to prepare his lecture. He had arrived in Freiburg in October 1928, had already completed an entire semester, and would be over halfway done with the second one when he finally inaugurated his new, and by this time not so new, tenure as full professor at the university. What took him so long? On a superficial level, Heidegger had overcommitted himself. Alongside his normal teaching duties of weekly lectures, seminars, and student advising, Heidegger's administrative responsibilities increased significantly, and his scholarly projects abounded. But this explanation will not suffice. Heidegger's output during his first year in Freiburg was tremendous, and he had ample material to draw on or even excerpt from for a short inaugural lecture. Perhaps then he was nervous about how to present himself to the world after assuming the celebrated chair of his mentor, the founder of phenomenology, Edmund Husserl. On one level, this won't do either. Students of the highest caliber had been flocking to Freiburg to study with the newly appointed professor, whom some were already calling the greatest philosopher in the world, already in 1929. This meant that the lecture hall would fill up so quickly that it became necessary to arrive 7 hours early at the latest in order to find a seat to hear his regular lecture courses. So he lectured four times during the week, and so you'd have to arrive 7 hours early every single day if you wanted a seat. Indeed, by May 1929, at least 600 students and people from the community were attending regularly. Thus, Heidegger's way of thinking was already on display for countless individuals in Freiburg. And as he writes in a letter to Karl Jaspers from November 10th, 1928, shortly after beginning to teach in Freiburg again, quote, "I am no longer hiding in my philosophizing." However, on another level, figures such as Husserl would not have attended Heidegger's courses. In fact, it was only after Husserl had heard What Is Metaphysics that he actually undertook to study the writings of his putative protege. The inaugural lecture was therefore Heidegger's genuinely public proving ground. Quote, "The moment came," recalls Petzet, "when I, like so many others who followed Heidegger, was allowed to see the true significance of the man, the master who determined my whole life far beyond any academic discipline." So here lines would be drawn in the sand. Husserl or Heidegger, phenomenology or fundamental ontology, consciousness or world. Or as the original version and only the original version trenchantly suggests, science or metaphysics, thinking or attunement, being or nothing. Heidegger was now ready to present his own way of thinking to the world. Before addressing these themes, I'll provide a very relatively short summary of the published version. Incidentally, the published version has been on the Santa Fe reading list, the senior reading list, for many years. In fact, What is Metaphysics was taught here in Santa Fe back in May 1965, which is the first academic year of the campus. So I found that out yesterday. Pretty interesting. All right, so a summary of the published version. When we ask the question, what is metaphysics, we might naturally expect an answer in the form of a definition. Metaphysics is, for example, a study of unchanging essences. Heidegger, however, proceeds differently, and he must proceed differently based on his initial conjectural understanding of metaphysics. For Heidegger, metaphysics concerns the whole of beings. As beings, we are necessarily a part of that whole. Thus, we cannot start by addressing the question of metaphysics as though it were something outside of us. We must instead be implicated in the question. Conversely, we must also examine how the question emerges out of and relates back to our basic situation. At the time Heidegger delivered his lecture in 1929, probably even more so for us today, this means that we cannot ask about metaphysics without considering the current scientific worldview. Heidegger is admittedly speaking to an institution of higher education, as I am today. But as we well know, the hegemony of science extends beyond academia. It determines, at least initially and for the most part, our mode of access to knowledge and truth. Just as we cannot stand outside of the whole, so Heidegger seems to believe, we cannot initially stand outside of our modern scientific situation. To what extent, then, does the scientific world picture dictate our modes of inquiry? On this view, all inquiry must relate to beings or to a particular domain of beings. For example, biology examines beings within the domain of the living. Physics examines beings within the domain of matter and energy. History examines beings within the domain of past events. Scientific inquiry must, Heidegger says, break into the whole of beings in order that a particular part may break out and fall under the scientific gaze. In all cases, scientific inquiry treats only beings. Nothing else falls within its purview. Is this all there is, though? What of this nothing in the phrase nothing else? Is it just a way of speaking? Or might it point us to something beyond the scope of science, even if science, and perhaps many of us when we first hear it, will scoff at all talk of the nothing? From the perspective of scientific logic, the nothing emerges when we assume the totality of beings as a whole and then negate that totality. The nothing is thus a logical construct, negation taken to the extreme. It has no share in being. It is unreal. Heidegger, however, bluntly asserts the opposite. The nothing does not arise from maximal negation. Rather, negation is only possible on the basis of an actual primordial nothingness. How does Heidegger justify this claim? Is the nothing simply a given for him? The nothing is not a given, but he does believe it is given. It is given implicitly in every negative action we take, whether this be denial, prohibition, or outright antagonism. And it is given explicitly, Heidegger contends, in the fundamental attunement of anxiety. In contrast to subjective feelings or internal states, Heidegger understands fundamental attunements, you could also translate this as moods, as constitutive of our way of being. They open up the world to us and key us into its harmonies. Think of how the world is when you're bored, overjoyed, or in love. The world itself shows up differently. Yet Heidegger is interested not just in the world. He wants to encounter the nothing. What is unique about anxiety, he says, is that it discloses both the entirety of what is and the nothing along with it. On Heidegger's phenomenological account, anxiety is not jittery nervousness. It is not discomfort in a social situation or fear about this or that. Anxiety takes no object. It is, as we say, free-floating. For in anxiety, everything slips away into indifference. Nothing grips us, nothing is there to hold on to, nothing matters. But this is not all. Anxiety does not merely make us hover above the world like tranquil birds on the wing. It also oppresses us. Not being at home in the world makes us feel uncanny. We go from nothing mattering to the nothing that matters, to the matter of the nothing. Heidegger takes an example from ordinary language and then distorts it. When you are no longer anxious, someone might ask you, what was the matter before? You might reply, it was nothing, really. But what you really mean is that it was the nothing. It is important to recognize that genuine anxiety does not disclose the nothing as one being among others, or even as some sort of super being outside the world of beings. It is nothing, no thing at all, and yet it shows up in union with beings as a whole. Anxiety does not therefore annihilate beings, leaving the nothing left over as a remainder, nor does it negate them logically. Ontic annihilation and epistemological negation are only possible on the basis of the more primordial ontological register of the nothing. When we are truly anxious, we experience this ontological register of the nothing as essentially active. It does three things. First, the nothing points away from itself, as our attempts to describe it show. Second, it also points toward beings as a whole. On one level, we become aware of beings as a whole only on the basis of the nothing. But the nothing is not just a matter of awareness. On a more fundamental level, the nothing also provides access to any and all relation to beings. The nothing is active as the transcendental condition for the possibility of thinking and acting in the world. Third, and most provocatively, anxiety does not merely reveal beings as not nothing. This not is also active. It is the annihilating or knotting on the part of the nothing itself. In Heidegger's scandalous phrase, das Nichts selbst nichtet, the nothing itself annihilates, the nothing itself knots. We now have an answer to the first part of the question, what is metaphysics? Heidegger began with the supposition that metaphysics addresses the whole of beings. We now see that it can do so only to the extent that it goes out beyond them. The question about the nothing is therefore a metaphysical question in the literal sense of the word. Only in transcending meta, the physical realm, can metaphysics turn back toward beings as a whole and say what they are. Ever since Andronicus of Rhodes coined the term to designate the 14 books he cataloged after meta, Aristotle's Physics, metaphysics has dealt with the question of being as such, among other things. In his inaugural lecture, Heidegger endeavors to show that being is inextricably bound up with the nothing. Metaphysics deals with being and nothingness. But what of the second part of the question about metaphysics? Have we ourselves been implicated in the question? Indeed, anxiety makes beings within the world slip away from us. Inasmuch as we are beings within the world, anxiety therefore makes us slip away from ourselves. We lose our identities, all distinguishing features. But we are not entirely lost. Rather, we discover that there is something deeper, something more abyssal about us than our worldly existence. We are not fundamentally in the world. Rather, we are fundamentally, quote, held out into the nothing. Insofar as we exist, we transcend the physical realm. We therefore do not just pursue metaphysical questions, we are metaphysical. And like being, at bottom, we are nothing, no thing. Metaphysics in the emphatic sense, which Heidegger also simply calls philosophy at this time, is therefore the attempt to explain our implicit metaphysical essence and the matters associated with it, being and nothing above all else. The published version of Heidegger's lecture contends that the sciences and the university must realize this if their work is to be properly grounded. Metaphysics is presented as the potential savior of higher education. The original version, however, is much more skeptical. Let's see why. So now section 3, Science and the University. In several of his numerous retrospective accounts of what is metaphysics, Heidegger indicates that his inaugural lecture was motivated by a strongly felt need. The sciences had become fragmented. They had lost sight of their true foundation. The only thing holding them together was an artificially imposed technical organization, which granted them little more than practical utility. The university had, in short, become a pluriversity. As Heidegger puts it in the published version of his lecture, quote, the scientific fields are quite diverse. The ways they treat their objects of inquiry differ fundamentally. Today, only the technical organization of universities and faculties consolidates this multiplicity of dispersed disciplines. The practical establishment of goals by each discipline provides the only meaningful source of unity. Nonetheless, the rootedness of the sciences in their essential ground has atrophied, end quote. In other words, and to extend the metaphor, If the sciences had become uprooted, it was because they had been standing on dry and barren ground. The rich soil of metaphysics had long since eroded. But Heidegger, our administrative gardener, knew what to do. He would transplant them to a place where they could again take root. Here they would be nourished by the earth of first philosophy. This, in effect, was how Heidegger saw things looking back in 1945 at the end of the Second World War. In April 1933, he was elected to be the rector, that is, the head of the University of Freiburg, and joined the Nazi Party. He relates that at the time, quote, it was uncertain whether those at the center of political power would listen to me and to what seemed to me to be a necessity and a task. But just as uncertain was the extent to which the university would actively join me to discover and to shape its own essence in a more primordial manner. Already in my inaugural address, What is Metaphysics?, delivered in the summer of 1929, I had presented this task to the public, end quote. Elsewhere, Heidegger even suggests that his academic and administrative ambitions of 1933 were merely an extension of What is Metaphysics? This can be seen, for example, in the opening paragraph of a speech he gave in May 1933 in honor of his rectorship, titled The Self-Assertion of the German University. Like the published version of What is Metaphysics, this speech also appeals to rootedness. Quote, the following of teachers and students under the rectors, that is Heidegger's leadership, awakens and grows strong only from a true and joint rootedness in the essence of the German University, end quote. Thus, it seems we need not see a break in Heidegger's root and branch effort to reform the university. Indeed, Heidegger's view of higher education remained relatively consistent throughout his career, and What is Metaphysics provides perhaps the most direct answer to this question of the university. The comparison between What is Metaphysics from 1929 and The Self-Assertion of the German University from 1933 becomes harder to sustain, however, once we turn to the original version of What is Metaphysics. Three points are especially noteworthy. First, the original version lacks the published version's diagnosis of fragmentation. Rather than speaking of the uprootedness and disarray of the sciences, Heidegger simply notes that, quote, the individual scientific fields are quite diverse. Their approaches are distinct, end quote. By itself, this claim is hardly offensive or disconcerting. It's obvious that physics shouldn't use the same methods as art history. Without alerting his audience to their ailments, Heidegger does not come across as promoting a cure. Instead, and this is the second point I would like to discuss, the original version sets up a starker contrast between science and metaphysics. Both versions note that science examines nothing other than beings, and therefore wants to know nothing of the nothing. But the original appears astonished by this. Quote, the nothing is given up on, in science, it exclaims. And then it continues with the question, doesn't science thereby give credence to nothing as a being? End quote. Contrast with this with the published version. Quote, the nothing is rejected precisely by science, given up as a nullity. But when we, and here Heidegger uses the more inclusive first person plural, when we give up on the nothing in such a way, do we not thereby concede it? End quote. The original version is also more critical of logic and the understanding. It goes so far as to call the understanding not just obstinate, but absurd, whereas the published version speaks only of the apparent absurdity of the question about the nothing from the logical point of view. Inasmuch as the sciences cannot proceed without the understanding, the original version represents a greater threat to their existence. This can be seen toward the end of the lecture, when the original version declares science absolutely laughable. Quote, the sobriety of science, which gives up on the nothing, thus becomes absolutely laughable, speaking metaphysically. In contrast, the published version drops the adverb and tones down the rhetoric. Quote, the presumed soberness of mind and superiority of science become laughable when it does not take the nothing seriously. Third, unlike in the published version, Heidegger offered little hope for unification when he first lectured on What is Metaphysics in Freiburg. The only alternative to absolute laughability, it seems, is to heed Leibniz's famous question. Quote, only if science gives in and stops giving up on the question, why are there beings at all and not rather nothing, can science make beings a problem and grasp itself from the basis of its existence, end quote. Why, though, should science make beings a problem? Doesn't it have enough problems to deal with? It may well be the case that why questions are ultimately rooted in the nothing, and interestingly not in wonder, or not fundamentally in wonder, but in anxiety, which makes wonder possible, and then questions about the why. So we might think about that, the relationship between anxiety and wonder. At any rate, it may be the case that they're rooted in the nothing, as Heidegger goes on to claim, but surely it isn't necessary to know this in order to overtly pose questions. I can ask why without knowing the nothing overtly. Why, moreover, should science be beholden to the Delphic imperative? Of what use is its self-knowledge? The original version just leaves us guessing. The published version, on the other hand, assigns a powerful philosophical role to the sciences. Quote, only if science exists on the basis of metaphysics can it fulfill in ever-renewed ways its essential task, which is not to amass and classify bits of knowledge, but to disclose in ever-renewed fashion the entire expanse of truth in nature and history, end quote. For readers of Being and Time, this development should come as a surprise. Recall already in section 3 of that book, Heidegger explains that the positive sciences precisely cannot open up domains such as nature and history. Instead, they must rely on philosophy to do so. Hence, it is as though in the published version of What is Metaphysics, Heidegger were encouraging scientists to become philosophers, or rather declaring any science worthy of the name to already be philosophical. Whatever the case may be, the published version is clearly more tactful and inclusive than the original, which at times anticipates Heidegger's notoriously late claim, his late notoriously divisive claim that science does not think. Yet the original version goes even further than what we see in Heidegger's late thoughts, for it questions the status not just of logic and the understanding, but also of thinking as such. So here now onto logic and thinking. Both versions of What is Metaphysics challenge the hegemony of logic in philosophy. From the standpoint of the understanding, the nothing is merely a nominalized logical constant or quantifier. Take the statement, the world relation orients itself to beings and to nothing else. We can easily convert this statement into the following, the world relation orients itself only to beings. In this usage, nothing is an acceptable word, for to nothing else is identical to only. There is not some thing in addition to which the world relation orients itself as well, namely the nothing. The problem arises when nothing becomes a something. To say nothing is something is a patent contradiction. But this is what, on this view, the nothing means. Thus the nothing is inherently contradictory. Heidegger is aware of these logical constraints, but he sees them rather as a disavowal than a description of reality. In fact, Heidegger believes that the sciences do orient themselves to the nothing when they orient themselves to beings, only they do so unthematically. They do so full of disdain and disregard. Yet this nothing is neither a being nor a something. We cannot say that it is this or that, or even simply that it is. For the nothing first opens the possibility for propositions and existential statements. Heidegger inverts the logical point of view. We do not arrive at the nothing by making a noun out of a negative quantifier, whether licitly or not. Rather, we can make use of negative quantifiers, something like not, only because we already have an implicit familiarity with the nothing. Indeed, what it means to be the kind of beings we are is to be suspended in a primordial nothingness. Yet the understanding will have nothing of this. But if Heidegger is right, and logic cannot provide access to this original nothingness, then there must be some way it becomes accessible in our lives. Otherwise, we would have to agree with the logical positivist philosopher Rudolf Carnap, who famously charged Heidegger with either just making pseudo-statements or simply using metaphorical language to hint at a certain emotional constitution. Heidegger anticipates such objections and responds to them with an appeal to what he calls attunements, in particular the fundamental attunement of anxiety. I'll delve more deeply into his treatment of anxiety in the next section, but for now let us recall that fundamental attunements are not mere emotions or even states of mind. They are, Heidegger says, the basic way of disclosing the world or of disclosing beings as a whole. Anxiety is unique insofar as it also discloses the nothing that is, in some sense, really there, even if it cannot be spoken of without logical contradiction. Moreover, anxiety makes this disclosure in a somewhat intelligible, if not logically deducible, way. As Heidegger puts it in Being and Time, just as understanding is always attuned, so attunement always brings along with it a certain understanding. However, as mentioned above, the original version of What is Metaphysics declares the understanding absurd. On top of this, it does so without qualification, whereas this does not occur in the published version. Even more troubling about the original version is a similar lack of qualification when it comes to the impotence of thoughts. After introducing the concept of attunement, Heidegger sharply distinguishes it from thinking. Quote, thinking can comprehend beings as a whole as little as it can comprehend the nothing. If the nothing is given, it can only become manifest in attunement, end quote. One might have expected Heidegger to say that attunements come prior to thinking, or that proper thinking should be guided by attunements. Instead, thinking just seems to get in the way. Quote, primordial anxiety happens only in rare moments. The nothing is for the most part disguised, and indeed it is so by thinking. In contrast, the published version of What is Metaphysics leaves room for a broader conception of thinking. It does admittedly question the status of logical thought and the latter's foundational principle of non-contradiction. It also critiques the attempt to think up an idea of the totality of beings and then to think of its negation, since this only yields a, quote, formal concept of the nothing that, as was mentioned earlier, is derivative of a more fundamental nothingness. However, unlike in the original, Heidegger does not assert the inability of thought to comprehend beings as a whole in his discussion of attunements in the published version, nor does he claim that thinking is what conceals the nothing. Even if a scientist qua scientist cannot think of the nothing, the scientist qua thinker should be able to. For all its provocations, the published version should therefore be more palatable to philosophers and even scientists than the original. What then should we say of the original version's dismissal of thinking? Is it mere hyperbole? It is one thing to challenge the basic principles of thinking, but to challenge thinking tout court is another matter. How can we understand what Heidegger is saying if thinking as such gets in the way? Don't we need thought, as Heidegger, who often refers himself to himself as a, if not the, thinker of being, acknowledges elsewhere throughout his career? To begin to answer these questions, we need to compare how the original and published versions conceive of anxiety. Okay, and a very brief fifth section on anxiety. For the sake of time, I'd like to note just four things about anxiety here. First, in the original version, anxiety comes across as more violent than in the published version. While both versions see anxiety as a sort of predator ready to pounce at any moment, it comes across as more of a raider and a plunderer in the original version. Second, it is so violent in the original that, in media res, it cannot be thought. Thinking only comes after the fact and itself needs to be rethought if we are truly to understand anxiety and the nothing that it reveals. Third, in contrast to the published version, anxiety is not accompanied by a, quote, peculiar calm in the original version. So there's no language of calmness when he talks about anxiety in the original. The original version accordingly places more stock in the non-cognitive side of anxiety, whereas the published version sees anxiety as already imbued with a degree of theory. Fourth, when we are anxious, nothing is really there. While the published version goes on to interpret this nothingness as no thingness, that is, as being, the original version leaves us with nothing to go on. I posit that this is truer to the experience of deep anxiety. It also leads to the question of whether Heidegger intended a difference between the nothing and being in the original version, and if so, what this might mean. Frank Hunt was the first person to point this out to me, that there's no language of being in this original version. So I'm going to try to think about why that's the case. So being and nothing. We saw earlier that Heidegger, the thinker of being, seems to abandon thinking in the original version of What is Metaphysics. Yet perhaps the most remarkable feature of the original version is that our thinker also seems to abandon being. The noun sein, in German, being, does not show up once in this version, whereas in the published version and in Heidegger's later accounts in Marginalia, the nothing is being as seen from the knot of beings, that is, being as no thing. Rather than as the other of being or of beings, Heidegger's published account interprets the nothing as belonging to the being of beings. The nothing is therefore nothing in itself. The word simply marks being's finitude. Is this what Heidegger means in the original version? If so, then is his failure to mention being a mere oversight? Or might it be a rhetorical strategy deployed to get us thinking, or as the case may be, to stop thinking? Is Heidegger trying to awaken the philosophy that lies dormant in each and every one of us, to call us to become the philosophers that we basically are, as he's fond of saying around this time? Heidegger no doubt wants to provoke us. Indeed, the original version of What is Metaphysics numbers among Heidegger's most provocative texts. But I believe we would be moving too quickly if we were to take the nothing as yet another way in which being is said. Instead, I would like to take seriously the possibility that Heidegger was attempting to understand the nothing on its own terms. This was, to be sure, a path Heidegger did not follow for long. But one of its forks leads to a destination that Heidegger would arrive at only in the mid-1930s, albeit by way of a different route. This destination is Heidegger's unique threefold distinction between beings, das Seiende, the beingness of those beings, die Seiendheit, and being as that which makes the beingness of beings possible, das Sein, or Heidegger sometimes writes Sein with a Y, archaic spelling. All right, an example. An example of number one would be to take every being in this room, so all those beings. Number two would be the essence of those beings, how we understand this essence. For example, we could understand all these beings as substances, as creatures under the essence of creation, or as objectivity. And three would be the condition for the possibility and intelligibility of how one and two relate. It would explain how it is possible that all the beings in this room can be understood as essentially different across time and space in radically different ways. In the original and published versions of his inaugural lecture, Heidegger notes that in Anxiety, both the nothing and beings as a whole and as such are revealed together. Although the nothing is not another being alongside beings, Heidegger does not simply equate the nothing and beings as a whole and as such. Rather, quote, in the original version, the nothing is the enabling of the openness of beings as a whole and as such for human Dasein. Thus, to the extent that beings as a whole and as such can be understood as being or beingness, a distinction between the nothing and being is preserved. So these three layers then can be mapped onto the original version of What is Metaphysics, but the terms are different. But I think phenomenologically what's going on is the same. Number one, beings individually or not as a whole and as such. Two, beings as a whole and as such, that is, being or beingness. And then the nothing as what opens up this difference between one and two. In other words, we have something like the threefold distinction mentioned earlier, except the nothing here stands for what I mentioned as being earlier. However, when the published version equates the nothing and being, our three terms are reduced to two. All right, so this is the published version. We seem to just have beings individually or not as a whole and as such, and beings as a whole and as such, which gets glossed as being or the nothing. So to put this as a proposition, using our favorite axiom from Euclid, two things equal to the same thing are equal to one another, we can say the nothing equals being, beings as a whole and as such equal being, therefore the nothing equals beings as a whole and as such. In other words, we are left with no more than what Heidegger calls the ontological difference between beings and being. Heidegger's main interest, however, especially later on in his career, is this difference itself, or what makes this difference possible. Starting in the mid-1930s, it's being as that which makes the beingness of beings possible, and in this original version of What is Metaphysics, trying to argue it's the nothing as what grants this difference between beings and beings as a whole and as such. It should therefore come as a no surprise when later on in his career, Heidegger criticizes his lecture along these lines. On the other hand, Heidegger will later praise What is Metaphysics for having reached a point beyond metaphysics, a sort of meta-metaphysics, if you will. As he puts it in the Contributions to Philosophy, his inaugural lecture, quote, already inquires out of the other beginning. What it makes visible in its determination of metaphysics is already no longer metaphysics, but is rather the overcoming of metaphysics, end quote. That is, Heidegger's lecture, especially its original version, transcends the mere distinction between beings on the one hand and beings taken as a whole and as such on the other. It opens up a new beginning for philosophy. The original version's focus on the nothing itself allows us to better grasp the difference not just between beings and beings taken as a whole and as such, but also between the meaning of the wholeness of beings and what makes this meaning possible. So this interpretation finds support in a letter that Heidegger wrote to his friend Elisabeth Bloch-Mann in September 1929. And I'm getting closer to the end. In this letter, Heidegger interprets a moving experience the two had during a short sojourn at the Benedictine Archabbey St. Martin in Beuron, Germany, around the time Heidegger delivered his inaugural lecture. So that's a picture of Beuron Abbey, which is near where Heidegger was born, within hiking distance. Whereas, writes Heidegger, contemporary Catholicism and everything like it, Protestantism no less, must remain anathema to us, Heidegger saw something special in what Beuron represented. Quote, Beuron, if I may give this an abbreviated name, will unfold as a seed of something essential. Bloch-Mann, for her part, was especially struck by the compline service. In this final office of the canonical hours, the monks complete their day and prepare for the night by chanting Psalms 490 and 133 from the Vulgate. Then, after a hymn, a reading, a versicle, and a blessing, they dismiss in silence, not to speak until morning, when Jesus' resurrection is symbolically reenacted. And so Heidegger and Bloch-Mann heard this compline service and were very moved by it, and they probably heard it in the room pictured on your left. I have a recording of the Beuron monks singing. Oh, does that say, okay, all right, okay, so, yeah. So this is actually from the last Gregorian chants of the compline service around Easter time. So let's see, I think I have to do this. So I'll just play maybe 30 or 40 seconds of it. Recording of the Beuron monks from, I think, about 10 years ago. So in contrast to the monks, Heidegger notes that his contemporaries, make little ado about their daily entrance into the night, for night and day hardly differ any longer. Everything, every moment is frenzied hustle and bustle. And remember, Heidegger was saying this in 1929. Yet it need not be this way, Heidegger says. The Beuron monks, some of whom Heidegger was personally acquainted with since his childhood, have something to teach us. Like them, quote, we must continually break through the mythical and metaphysical primal power of the night if we are truly to exist, end quote. But this also means that the night can never be overcome, not in this state of the world, at least. We must acknowledge and daily prepare for the fact that our existence is essentially held out into the night. So it's pretty astounding. In the Bloch-Mann letter, he speaks of hineingehalten seins der Existenz in die Nacht, so the being held out of existence into the night. And then in the original version, Dasein, that just refers to the being whose being is an issue for it, chiefly us. Dasein means holding oneself out into the nothing. Dasein heißt sich hineinhalten in das Nichts. So he's thinking these two ideas together, pretty much simultaneously. All right, so he says that we must live in view of the night and evil, but this requires that we, quote, place nothingness in the path of the depths of Dasein. Only then can we let what is essential grow. Only then can we see that the good is only the good of evil. So the good is the good of evil. Only in this way will we compel a turning of our age from out of the depths. Much could be said of Heidegger's letter. Here I would like to note only two things. First, as in the original version of What is Metaphysics, the word sein, being, does not appear. Instead, Heidegger understands the deepest layer of existence as nothingness. This too resembles the original version, only now nothingness is joined to evil and the night. If Heidegger's language in What is Metaphysics had a rhetorical edge, it now takes on mythological dimensions reminiscent of people like Jacob Boehme or Schelling. And I'll note parenthetically that these figures, along with people like Eckhart and Hegel and Hölderlin, are all people he's in dialogue with as he's thinking about the nothing. And in Meßkirch, I came across so that's his hometown, a photocopy of the first page of an edition of What is Metaphysics, in which Heidegger wrote a sort of epigraph. And it's from Hölderlin, wir sind nichts, was wir suchen, ist alles. We are nothing, what we are looking for is everything. So he was thinking about Hölderlin as a possible author for an epigraph, but that never actually happened. Second, if there's an ontological layer in this letter, it is not on the same plane as the nothing. We might instead see it as tied up with what in medieval thought are called the transcendentals. The good is being insofar as it is desired. It belongs to the day, to the manifestness of beings to our intellect. This is being as true. Yet there is a deeper sense of truth for Heidegger. The truth of the intellect is only possible on the basis of an insuperable play of concealment and unconcealment. Likewise, as Heidegger's letter teaches, being as good is only possible on the basis of an insuperable evil at the heart of things. And day is only possible on the basis of a primordial night. So thus, as in the original version of What is Metaphysics and in his later thought, here too, in this letter to Bloch-Mann, we have three basic layers of reality. One, beings. Two, being as the day, the good, truth as veritas. And three, the nothing as night, as evil, as the lethe, or concealment of truth, as aletheia, unconcealment, the Greek word for truth, aletheia. Now, in both the original version of What is Metaphysics and in Heidegger's letter to Bloch-Mann, we could, of course, understand being as distinct from beings as a whole and as such, or from their transcendental correlates. What Heidegger says of the nothing would accordingly just as well apply to this deeper sense of being. I do not wish to deny that there's some evidence in support of this reading. However, Heidegger himself vacillates on the status of being. Sometimes it seems as though he just means the non-substance-based, non-present at hand, time-ridden being of beings, or as he puts it in Being and Time, that which, quote, determines beings as beings, that which is always the being of a being, and that which is addressed in the ontology of the totality of beings as a whole, end quote. The nothing in this case serves simply to describe the temporally finite character of being. Heidegger's intention in his magnum opus is clear. Quote, when we ask about the meaning of being, our inquiry does not brood on anything which stands behind being, but questions being itself insofar as it stands within the intelligibility of Dasein. In contrast, Heidegger does seem set on a dimension deeper than being, or at least a dimension deeper than the being of beings, in the Bloch-Mann letter and in the inaugural lecture, and especially in its original version. In these texts, Heidegger's perspective on being has not only widened out beyond its relation to the human being, Heidegger's fundamental ontological perspective has also been cast, quote, into the turbulence of a more originary questioning. What is the status of this questioning, and what does it mean for Heidegger's trajectory? Was, albeit for a brief time, Heidegger's question about being becoming a question about the nothing? Was Heidegger's move away from ontology, which would become explicit less than 1 year later, a move not toward a different way of thinking being, but toward a me-ontology, toward a study of what is not? Yet here, too, being creeps back in under the guise of existential negation. Instead, we might ask in conclusion whether Heidegger's ontology had become, for a few short months, an udenology, a study of the nothing as such. Is this hypo-ontological conception of the nothing essentially incompatible with science? Is this perhaps one reason why Heidegger was not trying to ground the sciences when he first lectured on metaphysics in Freiburg? The newly discovered original version of what is metaphysics compels such questions and much else besides. Thanks.